Okay, today we are going to learn Psukim Yud Chet through Kaf Dalet in the first chapter of Shmuel Aleph. So I think after Sukkot we will finish the first parak. It only took us a month or so. Okay, so what we're going to do today is we're going to go through the psukim, and there's some really interesting things. And then I'm going to introduce a notion that is, as the rabbis say, tzarich iyun. You'll often find on a topic that the rabbis are commenting on, both like much earlier rabbis and modern rabbis as well, tzarich chuk chuk ayin, which stands for tzarich iyun. We need to look into the matter further. Okay, so I stumbled upon this notion that I don't have any conclusions for you, but I feel like if great rabbis can say tzarich iyun, then I can say tzarich iyun too. So you'll see when we get there. Okay, so we're going to go pasuk by pasuk. Vatomer timsa shivchatcha chen be'enecha vatelecha yisha ledarka. That's a ma'pike, ledarka. Vatochal ufaneha lo hayula od. Okay, so this is after the little halachic segment that we learned last time. The very last halacha was that if you wrongly accuse somebody of doing something, you have to give them a bracha, which my children are doing at least every day. So after Eli gives Chana a bracha for having wrongly, that her request should be granted, after wrongly accusing her of being drunk, then Chana says, and she said, may your bondswoman find favor in your eyes. And the woman went on her way and ate, and her face was not any, she didn't have her face anymore, is really what it says in the Hebrew. They translate it as her face was not sad. So we're going to look at Rashi. Timtza shivchatcha chen. Levakesh aleha rachamim. She wanted to beg for mercy on her. She wanted him to beg for mercy. Now, why is Rashi commenting on this? This is just normal. It seems like it's just normal language of how you would speak to somebody in a position above you in a respectful way. We see that a lot in Tanakh and different places. So what's going on here, I think, is the fact, Rashi's commenting on the fact that we repeated the word ama, amatcha, so many times. Chana said it, remember, three times in her one pasuk prayer where she makes her neder, her vow. And here, suddenly, we've switched to the word shifcha. So a lot of the commentators say they're just synonyms, that there's nothing to worry about. But I think that this is what Rashi is hinting on when he says that this use of the word shifcha as opposed to ama is begging for mercy. And we're going to see that in the Alshich in a minute. We'll go on with it, but just to upaneha lo hayulo, she didn't have her face. This is one of those, you gotta love the Hebrew language with their singular nouns and plural nouns that don't match our singular nouns and plural nouns. Hi, how are you?
Good, and you?
Good. Okay, here.
Sorry, I'm late.
We just started, Lily. Okay, so panim, shena punim. Panim is clearly plural. So hence the plural hayu, which sounds funny to our native English-speaking ears. Okay, so panim shel za'am. She no longer had the face of anger, which is really a beautiful concept to think that Chana came out of this experience so refreshed that her entire face actually changed, and that she no longer had a bitter face of anger, that she was just completely transformed. And you can imagine her coming out glowing, in a sense, transformed. Okay, so now the Alshich is going to talk about a couple interesting things in this pasuk. So he says, "Vatomer timtza shivchatcha chen be'enecha." Hine hara'ui tomar matzati chen. So the Alshich is saying that it would have been more proper. Hi, do you mind sharing? Sorry. So it would have been more proper, the language to be matzati chen in the past tense, because this timtza shivchatcha chen be'enecha is in the future sense. So here, she's thanking Eli, and you would think she's saying, if I have found favor in your eyes, but no, she's saying, if your maidservant will find favor in your eyes, which is a very strange construct to say when you're taking leave of somebody. Like, she's clearly trying to apologize, ask for mercy in some sense, so maybe she was a little chutzpahdik, as we talked about last time. But yet, she's putting it in the future, that your maidservant will find favor in your eyes. Okay, so that's why the Achshich says this. Achamra, so how does the Achshich explain it? And this is beautiful. Hine yadat she'elati, shehi ben la'avodat Hashem. So you know my request, which is a son to serve Hashem. Okay, now we talked about before that he doesn't necessarily know, but the Achshich is assuming he does know. Ubatachti bekoni ki asher matzati chen l'sayena bateit Hashem otoli. And I promised, I think this is my creator, that I have...
Ubatachti?
Bekoni.
Ubatachti, I trust.
Right, I trusted.
In Hashem.
Right. I trust in Hashem that I had found favor, okay, that he would aid me in Hashem giving him to me, okay? Od emtzachin, but I will yet find favor in the future, shetigadluhu li la Hashem, that he will be raised with me for Hashem. So it's not just the act of Hashem giving her the child if she finds favor, but that he will find favor in the way that she raises him. Just so beautiful, like it doesn't end with the birth.
I think tigadluhu is how you will raise him for me.
Oh, shetigadluhu.
Just answer early, because she's going to give him.
Oh, beautiful. Okay, very nice. Sorry about that. Yes. Okay, that Hashem will take care of him. For me. Okay. V'zeo shekasher gamaltu ve'avilov. And this is when she weaned him and she brought him. And the psukim say, El hana'ar hazeh hitpalati, on this boy I davened. We're not going to get to that today, but there's a lot of midrashim on that. V'gam anochi hashaltihu l'Hashem. And also, I am lending him to Hashem. V'nachto etzlo. And she left him with him. And that could be a capital H. V'liyotah me'atah sho'alet yoter al hakodam. And here's where we get into the shivcha and ama. And now, since she's asking more than she was asking previously, because she's not only asking for a child, but she's asking that there be care given in the raising of that child. Hishpila atzma yoter, v'lo amra amatcha ki im shifchatcha. She lowered herself even more and did not refer to herself as an amma, rather a shifcha. So I didn't find much on this besides the statement by the Al-Sheikh. I found something by Yael Ziegler, who addresses it. She says, and it was just a footnote, Yael Ziegler. So Shifcha and Amma are generally used synonymously. Avigal's words to David suggest that Shifcha denotes the lowest servant in the social hierarchy. And also Ruth calls herself an Amma. So just a little bit on those two words. An Amma, we see in the story of the daughter of Paro, when there's a midrash whether her arm stretched or whether she sent her maidservant, because it's a similar word, amma. Rashi actually refutes any similarities based on the nekudot and the punctuation of it. He says that it has to be her maidservant and that the midrash of the arm stretching is not true. But so amma does have this connotation of something like an extension of yourself, and shifcha could come from the word mishpacha, family. So, I don't know, but there's clearly something going on here with those two words, and we're going to come back to that at the end with our Tzarich Iyun part of this year. Okay? So, Pasuk Yotet. And thank you for your translation help. V'yashkima b'boker. So, they woke up early in the morning. V'yashtachavu lifnei Hashem. And they bowed before Hashem. L'yashtachavot. All these, we have a lot of different words for bowing in Hebrew. And just so you know, hishtachavut is spread eagle, on the floor, spread eagle. Okay? So in the Aleinu, you're all familiar with Evenachnu Korim. So lichroa is to bend your knees. And then we don't do the aerobics necessary. We don't do it anymore. We just kind of bow a little further. But in ancient times, it would be spread eagle, which is when you hear about the miracles of the Beis HaMikdash, that there was always room. So that's the miracle, that people would be standing squished, but there'd still be room to go spread eagle when you had to bow. We sort of do it, not really in the Aleinu on Rosh Hashanah, right? But it's spread eagle. Okay. Anyway, they bowed before Hashem. V'yashuvu. And they returned, Vayavo al Beitam Haramata, and they came back to their house in Ramah. I just want to point out again that it doesn't say Ramataim Tzufim, like we saw in the very first pasuk of the story, because we never see that place again. But we will see that Shmuel Hanavi comes back to Ramah time and again, even though he's really raised in the Mishkan after maybe he's 2 years old. He does consider Ramah his home, and we see that over again throughout Shmuel. Okay, Vayadal Kanat Chana Ishto, and Chana knew his wife, Vayizkareha Hashem, and Hashem remembered her. So her request is being fulfilled. Okay, Pasukaf. Vayhi L'tkufat HaYamim, and it was after a period of days, Vatahar Chana Vatele Ben, that Chana became pregnant and she gave birth to a boy, Vatikrat Shmo Shmuel, Ki Mehashem She'iltiv. She called his name Shmuel because from Hashem She'iltiv. And this can be translated in two ways, and I think it's very poignant, the two ways to understand it. So the translation here says, I asked, a she'ela is a question, right? So this is what I requested, this is what I asked. But what else is a she'ela? What's a sho'el in halachic terms? A borrower, right? A sho'el is a borrower, which is the most, takes the most responsibility in terms of the four different types of people. There's lenders, there's renters, there's watchers, and there's the borrower. So the borrower has the most liability. That's what I was looking for. So I just think it adds an extra dimension if you understand it as Chana made this vow to bring him back. So if we read it not as this is what I asked for, but I'm borrowing him from Hashem. And then when she brings him back, as we'll see after our break, that she then lends him to Hashem later. So it's just the way, and we should all keep in mind that our children are borrowed from Hashem in essence, and that we ask for these children, it's true, but Hashem's giving us the schut of raising these neshamas. Okay, so there's just a few, so the question is though, if she was calling him his name because from Hashem She'il Tiv, what would you expect his name to be? What name is made from She'il Tiv? Sha'ul, right? Sha'ul. So why isn't his name Sha'ul? Is there some kind of confusion here? So the rabbi said, we're going to look at a few different explanations. So Rashi says, Shmuel, Al Shem Kel, in the name of God, Ve'al Shem Hama'asehu Nikra, Kimimenu She'il Tiv. And in reference, because of the incident, the action, he was called, because from him he was asked. So Rashi is saying the mem here somehow is like mimenu, from, but somehow he doesn't really explain it. So he's kind of skirting the issue a little bit in his explanation, but he's inserting a mem there. He's explaining the mem as from. Okay, the Malbim, Vatikrat Shmo Shmuel.
No, but first of all, I never took it as a I asked for him, because I always take it as borrowed.
Uh-huh.
But I think that Rashi also said, if you divide it, it's like his name is God-like.
Oh, Shmo-El. Okay, very nice. Shmo-Kel. Okay, so that is excellent, but Rashi is skirting the issue of the Sha'ul in there. And we have that a few times. I just want to mention Noach. When Noach is named, his father says, he will menachem. And if he was, so Noach means to rest, and lenachem means to comfort. I'm not quoting it accurately. But that's another example where the name doesn't necessarily fit the explanation. So it's not completely out of the ordinary. Okay. So Malbim says, Vatikra et Shmo Shmuel, sheyesh bo shnei milot. So within the word Shmuel, it's a, what's it called that the kids learn in elementary school? Compound word, right? It's a compound word. Sha'ul mikel. That it's a combination, not even compound, it's more of a contraction, of asked for from Hashem. V'zeh shamar ki mehashem she'altiv. U'kmo shekatuv shelo bebakasha ayidei amseim rak mehashem levado. So it's Sha'ul, and then inserted in there after the shin is mikel. And that might be what Rashi was implying also. So it's these two words that are inserted together. And Malbim then stresses what he stressed before, that Chana is speaking directly to Hashem without an intermediary. And that's why it's Mikel from Hashem. There was no intermediary. Okay? One more explanation of a doc. Actually, there's two more explanations on that. Shmuel, Hurkava Hamila Vizahatam, Min Ki Mehashem She'eltihu. So the reason for this name is because from Hashem I borrowed or I asked for. Ki Yesh Be'otiot Shmuel Sha'ul. So within the name Shmuel are the letters of Sha'ul, borrowed or asked. Ve'yesh Be'otiotav, and also in the letters Gamkin Mikel, from God. Ki Ilu Amra Sha'ul Mikel. So all these letters fit into this name Shmuel, and they're contracted to be Shmuel, but they mean Sha'ul Mikel. They're just in the wrong order. Okay, now the Al-Sheikh has something really amazing to say about this. Okay, and you'll help me with the Hebrew if I need help. Vayhi hayom l'tkufat hayamim v'tar chana. So it was after a period of days that Chana got pregnant. Uvinyan hakatuv hasheni ra'ui lasim lev. So we need to pay attention to the language. Shenotein ta'am shekarato Shmuel al mehasham she'eltiv, that it gives a reason that she called him Shmuel, because from Hashem I borrowed or requested. V'haloin kein hu haya la likro Sha'ul. And the Al-Sheikh says, if this is the case, he should have been called Sha'ul. Ach efshar she'achar she'kavanata lomar ki mehasham she'ala oto. Yet, it's possible that after her intent to say that it was from Hashem that she requested him, v'im hayta karato Sha'ul, and if she had simply called him Sha'ul, lo yuvan she'aya Sha'ul mehashem, it wouldn't be clear that he was borrowed or requested from Hashem. There's no Hashem's name in the word Sha'ul. Alken karato Shmuel, she'yesh mem, umilvad hamem yesh otiot Sha'ul. And therefore she called his name Shmuel, which has a mem, and aside from the mem, there are the letters of Sha'ul. Hamem hi rosh tevat me Hashem. And the mem is the first letter of the expression from Hashem. The od arba otiot Sha'ul, and the four letters of Sha'ul. Havi komer me Hashem Sha'ul. And that is as if to say, from Hashem he was borrowed. Okay, now he's going to give another explanation. So those are all pretty similar, playing around with the letters. Now here's another explanation. Oh, b'derech acheret. Or we can do this a different way. Behu ki hine amru rabotenu zal. Our rabbi said, b'midrash agadat Shmuel. In a midrash agadat Shmuel, midrash Shmuel, parsha gimel. V'zel ushanam. And here's what they said. Ach yakum Hashem et dvaro. Hashem will establish his words. Rabbi Yirmiyah b'shem Rabbi Shmuel. So Rabbi Yirmiyah said in the name of Rabbi Shmuel, bar Rav Yitzchak, then son of Rav Yitzchak. B'chol yom hayta bat kol yotzet u'menatznetzet b'chol ha'olam kulo. During that time period, there was a bat kol that went out and sparked or spread throughout all the world. V'omeret, and what did this bat kol say? Tzadik echad atid la'amod u'shmo Shmuel. There is a tzadik who will stand in the future, and his name is Shmuel. Have you heard this midrash? Okay. V'kol isha shehaita yoledet ben haita motzi'ah shemo Shmuel. And every woman who had a baby in that time period would call her son Shmuel. V'kevan shehayu ro'im et ma'asav, but once they saw his actions, hayu omrim ein ze Shmuel. They would say, this is not Shmuel. V'kevan shenolad zeh, but once Chana's baby was born, v'ro'im et ma'asav, and they saw his actions, amru kemedumim anu shezehu. We think that this is the one. This is the Shmuel that the bat kol was talking about. Ad kan l'shona. Hine ki bat kol zeh haya mefursam. Behold, since this bat kol was so famous, ad shekol hayoledet zachar hayta korato Shmuel, to the extent that anybody who had a baby boy called his name Shmuel, ובזה ייתכן כי אמרה חנה בליבה, כי זה השמואל אשר דיבר פי השם. This is the Shmuel. I'm going to give birth to this Shmuel that the mouth of Hashem was talking about. Vikarato Shmuel, and that's why she called him Shmuel. So we don't have to play around with the letters and make contractions and compound words. We can say there was a bat kol that everybody at this time knew about, that there would be a boy named Shmuel, and that's why Chana called him Shmuel. V'zeo amro v'tikra at Shmo Shmuel, and that's why it says she called his name Shmuel. V'teda lama karato Shmuel, and you should know why she called him Shmuel. Halo hu ki mehashem shaltiv, because he was borrowed from Hashem. Lomar hine ze im Hashem haya Shmuel b'mitzvotav u'bishmo, that this one is with Hashem, im Hashem, that Shmuel was with Hashem in his mitzvot and in his name. B'kasher hitpalati, and when I davened, hayiti kishoelet sheyetza mimeni, I was requesting that this Shmuel, as prophesied in the bat kol, would come from me. V'zeo ki mehashem she'altiv, and this is what it means, from Hashem I requested, shehaya im Hashem nikar b'shmo, that he would be known with his name, that he's from Hashem. V'she'altiv ani lomar tna oto al yadi, I was asking, give this Shmuel by way of me. Klomar, no, I don't want to read the rest. So that's why she called him Shmuel. And I heard this, I've seen this midrash a lot, and I heard Rabbi Anton, the principal of Torah Academy, give over this midrash, and I searched and searched, and I didn't ask him. I need to ask him still. He cited a slightly different version, that each of these children that were called Shmuel, even though they didn't rise to the level of Shmuel Hanavi, because their parents raised them as if they could be the Shmuel, they each merited Ruach HaKodesh. And it was really beautiful to hear the elementary school principal talk about children in this way. Like, if we have faith in our children, they may not all rise to be the greatest whatever, but they will all feel attached to Hashem and to the Yiddishkeit, and it's just really nice. Okay, so that's the Al-Sheikh on why his name is Shmuel. Any questions on Shmuel? Okay, so Kaf Aleph. Vayal ha'yish al-kana v'chol beito lizboach la'ashem et zavach ha'yamim v'et nidro. So Elkanah and his entire household went up to slaughter to Hashem the sacrifice of the days, meaning the holidays, v'et nidro, and his vow. Okay, I just was a little curious about his vow, so I want to show you a couple of mefarshim on that, especially because we know that who made a vow? We know Chana made a vow. So, and it hasn't even really been realized yet. So here, Ve'et Nidro, Ma Shenadar Hu Bi'echud Ba'avur Shenifkata Ishto. Oh, sorry, that's Malvim. So the Rashi first, Et Zavach Hayamim, Yat Devach Moadya. So he's quoting the Targum on this, and he's just saying the proper sacrifices for each of the holidays that he's going up. Ve'et Nidro, and his vow. Nidarim shenadar bein regel regel haya makriv beregel. The vows which he made between pilgrimage festivals, he would sacrifice on the following festival. So Rashi doesn't relate this to Chana's vow at all.
Wait, but isn't it like, if a woman makes a vow, if her husband doesn't annul it, that it's his?
Right.
In a way.
Right.
So that's...
Well, is it... His he vow. Has liability if his wife doesn't fulfill it. Is it his, though? I don't know.
I'm,
I mean, he has the power to annul it. But he doesn't annul Chana's vow. So I think.
But if he doesn't annul it, somebody have to do it.
Right. So she does do it. She brings her son.
So maybe he does it for her or with her.
Right. So, but Rashi's saying, no, it's completely independent. It's his own independent vow that he's doing it for. And the Malbim says something similar, but makes it more personal. Ma shenadar hu b'yichud, ba'avur shenifkada ishto. So that which he himself made a neder, but what did he make a neder about? That his wife would be remembered. He would bring a korban if his wife would be remembered. That was his neder. So it's here the Malbim's connecting it a little to Chana, but it still has nothing to do with Chana's vow. Chana's in charge of her own vow when she brings Shmuel back to the Mishkan after he weans. Okay. B'chana lo alata. But Chana did not go up with her husband. Ki amra li isha, because she said to her husband, Ad yigamel hana'ar, until the boy will be weaned. V'havotiv, and then I will bring him. V'nirat p'nei Hashem v'yashav sham ad olam, and then he will see the face of Hashem and he will stay there forever. We talked about this unfortunate use of the word forever before, that Shmuel does only live 52 years, the 2 years he's nursing with Chana, and then the 50 years, which is considered the lifespan of a Levi in the Beis Mikdash, in the Mishkan.
That's it? It was 52?
Yeah. Yeah. Rashi's going to do the math for us. Okay, so Adi Gamal, Lesof Kaf Bet Chodashim, and there's another version that says Kaf Dalet, Shekach Zman Tinok Linik. So Rashi and says at the end of 22, but there's another version that says 24, which is where he says it elsewhere, because a child is assumed to nurse for 24 months.
And that's how it was with Yitzchak, that he nursed 2 years.
Yeah, exactly, 24 months. So I just... I'd done some studies on this before. We're not going to get into it in depth here, but according to most attachment theory psychologists, the first 2 years of a child's life are the most important for developing a sense of attachment. And I just like to imagine the amount of love that Chana poured into this child during those first 2 years of nursing and how it really kept him going. We see Shmuel... we're going to see that when Chana drops him off at the Mishkan, she leaves him with the jacket. And she visits him every year, and either the jacket grew, according to the Midrash, or she made him a new jacket every year. So he has this me'il, this jacket. And the me'il is sort of a theme throughout Shmuel's life, to the extent that, and we're going to... we're going to see this a little bit too, that when Shaul hires a necromancer, a woman, to conjure up the dead, they are able to recognize Shmuel because of his me'il, his jacket. And I feel that that's all going back to Chana and the love she poured into him in those 2 years. And we'll see that inside as we get to it later. Okay, so Chana didn't want to take him up until she was ready, until he was weaned and she was ready. Okay, and then we'll just read this in English. Rashi does all the math of the forever. Forever in the Levitic sense means 50 years, as it says, and from the in Numbers 8:25, from the age of 50 years he shall return from the host of the work. Figuring as follows, we determine that Shmuel's lifetime was 52 years. Eli judged Israel for 40 years. On the day of Chana's prayer, he was appointed judge. By subtracting the year in which Chana conceived Shmuel, there remained 39 years. Shmuel governed Israel from the time of Eli's death for 13 years. Figuring thus, on the day of Eli's death, the ark was abducted, and it remained in the field of the Plishtim for 7 months. From there it was brought to Kiryat Yarim, where it remained until David took it out of there after he had reigned 7 years in Hebron over Yehuda. And all Israel accepted him as their king. And it is written, and as was, from the day that the ark abode in Kiryat Yarim, that the time was long, for it was 20 years, etc. Subtract from them 7 years which David reigned in Hebron. We find that from the time that the ark was abducted until Shaul's death were 13 years and 7 months. And Shmuel died 4 months before Shaul. And somehow from all those numbers you get 52. Okay.
That's too much.
Me too. Okay. So Kakimam. Vayom el Elkanah Isha, and Elkanah her husband said to her, Asiyah tov be'enaych, do what is good in your eyes. He knows now to listen to her, right? Shvi ad gam lechoto, sit until you wean him. Now, there's a slight discrepancy here, which was interesting. I don't know how meaningful it is, that the way Chana said the weaning, it was in the Nifal. She was going after child-led weaning, okay? When he will be weaned. Mm-hmm. And Elkanah here is in the Pa'al, in the active. So he says, when you will wean him. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how significant it is. It's something for husbands and wives to discuss among themselves. Okay. So, and stand...
Maybe Igamel is when he decides to stop nursing.
Exactly.
And he says, until you stop nursing.
Exactly.
Him.
So there's a little discrepancy. Chana saying, I'm going to let him decide, and Elkanah's kind of saying, you be the decider. Okay. Ach Yakim Hashem et Dvaro. We saw these words before. Only may the Lord fulfill his word. Vateshev ha'isha v'teinak ad bena ad gam la'oto. And the woman stayed and nursed her son until she weaned him. And this is what the Al-Sheikh said, until Hashem will fulfill his word, that this will indeed be the Shmuel that was talked about in the Batkal. Okay, so Rashi is very interesting. Rashi quotes that exact same Midrash. We don't need to read it here. But Rashi quotes it on these words. So whereas the Alshich quoted it on the name Shmuel and why Chana would name her Shmuel and how it fits in with the explanation given in the text, Rashi brings it, as the Alshich alluded to as well, with these words, Ach Yakam Hashem et Devaro, Yakim, sorry, until Hashem will fulfill his word. That's where Rashi quotes the same midrash of the name Shmuel and every woman naming their child Shmuel. Okay, so we're not going to repeat that midrash. Kafdalid Vatalehu Ima Kasher Gimalatu. And Shoshi, you can help me with this, because I was listening to a shir, and I don't think the rabbi in the shir had the grammar right. So she brought him up with her, Kasher Gimalatu.
Yeah.
That means she weaned him, right?
Yeah.
So it looks like she kind of acquiesced to her husband. And she weaned him. The rabbi I was listening to this year said that it was child-led, but I don't think so.
What do you mean?
That it was like the Nephal, but this is not Nephal. So,
no, but also, look, he said 22 months.
Right.
And 22 months is not 2 years.
Right, but then the other version is 24. Remember it said Samach Tak Ayin Kaf Dalet Chodeshim? So, and Rashi has said 24 months, other places like you said with Yitzchak. So that's probably why that's more reliable.
Okay.
B'parim shlosha ve'efa echat. So three bowls in one efa, which is a measurement, how we measure meal, some kind of flour, of kemach, sorry, of flour. V'nevel yayin, and an earthenware jug of wine. V'tiviehu beit Hashem shilo, and she brought him to the house of the Lord, to Shilo. V'hana'ar na'ar. And the child was young is one way to view it. We see this word na'ar can mean a young child, but it can also mean an apprentice. Yehoshua is called a na'ar with regard to Moshe when he's clearly not a young man. So you could say the young boy became an apprentice in the Mishkan. I forgot if it was the Alshich or the Malbim. I didn't include it, but it was something about like Lina air means movement. And so adolescents, you know, I teach here in this high school, and especially young boys, you see a lot of movement and shaking. It's very, I heard this from Rav Moshe Weinberger. He was doing a comparison of a na'ar, which is all this movement, as opposed to a yelid, which is younger. And he quoted something else that said yelid is backwards for dli, which is a pail. So a young boy is to be filled up like a pail or a bucket, and a na'ar is when they start to move and shake and sort of form their own personality. Okay, so this translates as the child was young, but it's a strange repetition, so we could translate it as he became apprenticed.
Well, I said Shiloh. I thought Shiloh is with a head.
Yeah, so I think there's some midrashim about why it's chasar, why it's missing a letter. Because this is sort of the beginning of the end of Shiloh, kind of, right? It's going to be destroyed, unfortunately. Okay, so this pasuk. So when I was doing the research on the Amma and the Shifcha, the two words for maidservant, I came across, I don't think it was even a Jewish thing, I think it was some scholarly article, about Hagar being referred to as both Shifcha and Amma in two different chapters. So the chapter where Sarah gives her to her, we'll see it all inside, she's called one thing, and then the chapter where Sarah says she has to be sent away, she's called an Amma. She's called a Shifcha the first time, and then an Amma. And then I started doing all these searches, and I was trying to search Shmuel and Hagar, and the number of websites of Sammy Hagar that popped up was really funny. Okay, so that was showing me a connection between Chana and Hagar, and by inference there was Sarah also. And then this phrase here in this pasuk, which seems completely innocuous, ve'efa echat kemach, also reminded me of Sarah. Okay, so then I started doing a little research and seeing things, and it just kind of exploded. Okay, so that's our tzarich iyun, is this connection. And even though we're past Rosh Hashanah, the Torah reading is about Sarah, and the Haftorah is our first two chapters of Shmuel Aleph dealing with Chana, but we're still in the season, so I think it's still relevant to talk about it in that way. And Also, not to mention, in a few weeks we'll be introduced to Sarah. We're actually introduced to her at the end of Parshat Noach, is when we first meet Sarai and Avram. So it's very relevant to talk about it still today. So you'll bear with me as I go through some of these sources, and I don't have too many conclusions about it, but I have some ideas, and you can offer your own ideas as well. Okay, so in Shmuel, when we were introduced to Elkanah, we called him, we said, Vayish Mehar Ephraim, we said he was from the mountain of Ephraim, and then at the end of that verse, we called him an Ephrati, which we translated based on Rashi as like a high up person, an important person, that he wasn't an Ephraimite, he wasn't from Shevet Ephraim, but he was a Levi who happened to live in Ephraim, and he was an important person. Okay, so Rabbeinu Bachaye, and I got this from Rabbi Ari Khan, he quotes, when Avraham refers to himself, V'anochi Efer V'Afer V'Efer, how do you pronounce it? I'm nothing but dust and ashes in the Rabbeinu Bachaye.
Okay.
So by way of pshat, he's saying, I was dust and I will return to ashes. And this is the vidui of the tzaddikim. And also David said, Ki hu yadai tzaren ezachor ki afar anachnu, we're dust. And also Iov refers to himself as afar ve'efer. But by way of midrash, Bishut shamar Avraham ve'anochi afar ve'efer, in the merit that Avraham referred to himself as dust and ashes, zachu banav l'shtei mitzvot afar sota ve'efer para. His children merited two mitzvot, the dust of the sota and the ashes of the para. So the sota is a woman, and again, this should be reminding of Chana a little bit, who says, I'm going to close myself up with a strange man so that I'll be granted children. We're going to see that in a little bit. And the para aduma, that you get to be tahor when you come in contact with a dead person. V'chein matzinu kol Yisrael shenikro b'shem Ephraim. And we also see that all of Israel is called in the name of Ephraim. And look at the word Ephraim, Efer, ashes. Okay? So here we have this comparison between Avraham and Elkanah, that Avraham calls himself dust and ashes, and Elkanah is called Mehar Ephraim and an Ephrati. So there's this connection here between us, and it's saying that it's a merit, Haben Yakir Li Ephraim, from Yirmiyahu that we read also in the Haftorah on the second day of Rosh Hashanah. My beloved son Ephraim, who ki'ilu amar Ephraim, shnei Ephraim. This is Ephraim, these are two Ephraim.
Shnei Afarim.
Right, shnei Afarim, thank you. Afaro shel Avraham ve'afaro shel Yitzchak. The ashes of Avraham and the ashes of Yitzchak on the altar. Okay, so here we have this very strange connection between Avraham and Elkanah. Okay, and then we have a conceptual concept in common between Sarah and Chana, that when Hagar gets pregnant, she mocks Sarah. That's Breishit Tetzayin Dalet, the second to last short source. Vayavo al Hagar v'tar. Avram came to Hagar and she became pregnant. Vatera ki harata, and she saw that she was pregnant. Vatekal gvirta be'enaha, and her mistress became less in her eyes. And Shmuel, we studied, took a long time to talk about, v'kasata tzarata gam ka'as, that her rival would make her very angry in order to make her thunder because Hashem had closed her womb. Okay, so we have that. And then these next two verses are where Hagar is called in the first, in Breishit Tet Zayin, when she first gives Hagar to Avram, she's called a Shifcha. B'Sarai Eshed Avram lo yalda, Sarai, the wife of Avram, hadn't given birth to him. V'la Shifcha Mitrit, and she had a Egyptian maidservant, Ushma Hagar. So if we go by what the Al-Sheikh said, she's first called the Shifcha, she's on the lowest status, and then later in Perek Kaf Aleph, when in Pasuk Yud, Vatomer Lavram, she says to Avram, Garesh Ha'ama Hazot. So she's risen in status, according to the explanation of the Al-Sheikh. She went from a Shifcha to an Ama. But she's telling Avram to expel this maidservant and her son because the son of this maidservant, again it's repeated, will not inherit with my son, with Yitzchak. So we have this Shifcha Amma thing. And then So this is what really hit me. Vayomer Avram Ohala. Avram hurried out to the tent, El Sarah, to Sarah, Vayomer Mahari. And he said, hurry, Shlosh Sa'im Kemach. 3 measures of kemach, solet. And this word kemach is actually, for flour, is actually a lot more rare than you would think. Okay? So it appears in regard to the korbanot. But really here in Breishit and in ours are the 2 of the times that it appears in a narrative section and not in a section like talking specifically about the korbanot. And it talks about bakar also, which I think we mentioned also. Sorry. Okay, well, I'll look for it later. Okay, so so I think that I'm going to stop there. Oh, this is the Or HaChaim. Says when Avram takes Sarah to Paro, okay? And there's a double language there where it says Ba'avarech u'biglalech, both of them for you and because of you. She'yalo lamar yitav li v'chayta nafshi biglalech o be'avarech. So he could have said, so you say you're my sister instead of my wife. Everyone knows what I'm talking about. So he only needed one of those words, for your sake or because of you, and he used both of them. Achein nitzkaven l'shnei devarim. So the Or HaChaim says he intended 2 things. Ha'achad l'man yativolo ba'avur achoto tova gashmit. So the first one is, by saying she was a sister, he would get a material goodness. Ve'od v'chayta nafshi, and further, that my soul will live v'gomer, al derech ma shedarshu zal. This is that which the rabbis made a midrash of. B'pasuk Shmuel Aleph Aleph, our midrash, im ra'at yir'eh. So the rabbis are making this connection between Sarah and Chana also, if you will surely see. She'im lo yafkida ta'aseh she'al korchecha yir'eh latet la zera. Al-yidei she'telech v'taster v'chule. And this is a midrash we learned, that if Hashem sees good, but if he doesn't see, she's going to shut herself up with a strange man so that Hashem will have to fulfill the pasuk of the sota woman who comes out clean and she has a child. Okay, and just one more. When it says in our pasuk, vatelecha isha ladarka, that she went on her way, the midrash says, mahu ladarka, what does it mean she went on her way? Shepirsa nida, that she became a nida. She went back to her menstrual cycles. And we learn the same thing about Sarah. Ve'Avram v'Sarah's kenim ba'im bayamim chadal liot l'Sarah orach k'nashim. Avram and Sarah were old, they were on in days, and Sarah had stopped her way of the women. And Rashi there says, orach nidot, the way of nida. So we have all these intertextualities and similarities, both conceptually and with the words itself, in this triangle, kind of Sarah, Hagar, and Chana. And I was thinking about this a lot, and I was thinking that Sarah took an active role in sending out Hagar and Ishmael, in expelling them. But according to the Midrash, why did Sarah die? Because of the very passive role she had in the Akedah, that she heard about it through the angel, and just hearing about the Akedah, whether she heard that he died or whether she heard that he almost died, was enough to take her soul out of her body. And here is Chana, infertile as Sarah was, as we saw, Kisara, remember? Shikura or Kisara, that either she was drunk or she was like Sarah. That was the Vilna Gaon on why Eli thought she was drunk, because of the Urim and Tumim in those 4 letters. So Chana davens for a child, and she takes an active role in sending out her own son. So it's almost, it's a little weird, and again, it's Tzarich Iyun, very much so. But in taking this active role in sending out her son, she's almost combining Sarah and Hagar and making a tikkun. And Shmuel does indeed bring unity to the Jewish people. And we see with Hagar that Ramban says that this was a huge mistake on Sarah's part and contributes to the relationship we have up until today with the Yishmaelites, with the Arab people. So that was a big mistake. And here, Chana takes this active role.
Big mistake to send
in the way she did. Yeah. Not everyone agrees with the Ramban, but the Ramban is very strong in criticizing both Sarah and Avraham and their roles there. So Chana is taking this active role, but Chana is sending her son out for a purpose, for serving Hashem in the Mishkan. And it might be a little bit of a tikkun for Sarah sending out Hagar and Ishmael. I don't know. Okay, so we should have peace between all peoples, between the Jewish people, and all other peoples, and everyone should have a beautiful Sukkah, Sukkot.